Well, everyone, BoxBox returns in full form. We do have our disappearing co-host, Matt, with us today. Wait, what was it you did last week?
I think I did a marathon last week.
No, we'd know about it if you did one of those. But anyway, Matt is back. We are back. We are BoxBox Club, powered by... Let me restart that. We are BoxBox Pod, powered by BoxBox Club, the greatest F1 widgets app on the market. So do check them out. If you want to download it for absolutely free, go to the App Store or the Google Play Store. There is a discount code in the description down below if you want to check that out as well. But it is absolutely free for you to try out. Yeah. Wherever you're listening to us, do give us a 5-star rating because it really makes a big difference to this podcast. And if you are listening / watching on YouTube, welcome. YouTube is the home of BoxBox Podcast. So make sure you click subscribe, like, and comment down below every time we say something that really gets you heated. Because that is going to be quite a lot. And today, we are going to kickstart the podcast with our friend, John Elkann. Let's get into it.
All right, guys, welcome along. Yeah, it's nice to be back. And I know we're going to get onto the Ferrari situation. But Luke, before we do that, can I just go back to a comment that we received on Spotify last week? There's one of them.
Was this on my solo episode?
It was on your solo episode, yeah.
Okay, so it's going to be a nice, positive, pleasant comment saying how well I've done, you know, turning up, recording a 60-minute podcast on my own.
Yeah. And fair play to you. Well done. I have done it myself, though, but, you know, well done. But this one is from Savannah Marie. It says, this episode was definitely different, but it was so good. Sometimes when I miss races like last weekend, I love listening to you guys. Thank you for the best podcast there is. Very nice.
Yeah. Savannah, might I add that we love you as well.
And this one, okay, like, this one made me chuckle. This one's from Nathan. And hello to you, Nathan. I hope you're having a good day. He said, no diabolical Norris agenda this episode, was euphoric. and I, you know.
Yeah, I agree, Nathan. It was, do you know what? It was a delight. It was like living in a Lando Norris paradise last week. You know, we were able to sit here as friends, I'm talking about, you know, me and you, the listener, the viewer, and just talk about how sensational Lando Norris was in Brazil, because he was, without having Matt, you know, chime in with his, oh yeah, but it's because Zak Brown has tuned the car to his liking and he's given Oscar Piastri 3 wheels. No, Lando won that fair and square. He was sensational last week and we got to enjoy it.
I'm not having this. I want to say something, okay? Because, all right, you think it's diabolical Norris agenda, whatever. I'm giving my opinion. I come on each week and I give my opinion about Lando Norris. This year, Lando Norris, up until after Sandford, has, you know, been a bit questionable whether he would actually go on and win a world championship or whether he had it in him to go on and be a world champion.
Well, not
and
questionable.
Luke, may I just say, you have also agreed with some of the opinions which we have had on this podcast, and you did also start to change your opinion on Lando Norris, saying, actually, oh, Lando okay. Norris, maybe not there, you know, to go on and win the championship.
But the difference between you and I is that I don't have a dartboard with Lando Norris's face on in my bedroom.
Oh, yeah, okay. Having an opinion and, you know, there's a difference from actually having an opinion and actually whether you hate someone. But I have to say, though, okay, I stand by what I've said in the past about Lando Norris. I haven't been hateful about him. I've just given my opinion on whether I thought he was world championship material. However, I am also very quick to say if I change my opinion or give someone credit or respect that they deserve, which I will do now, Lando Norris has turned it around and he is looking like a true world champion. All right.
Okay. So let me ask you this.
Yeah.
You've now, presumably you've switched. You believe Lando Norris is the favourite for the world championship?
On current form, yeah. Yeah.
Do you believe that something has gone on at McLaren that has enabled Lando Norris to turn it around in the fashion that he has?
Look, I don't think there's been drastic changes. I think they've obviously changed something to the car, which has benefited Lando Norris performance-wise, and that's fine. You know, that's what they do. This is why these teams are the best in the world, because they change things and they look at different things to you know, better their performance. Do I think that actually they've deliberately done something to sabotage Oscar Piastri? No, I don't. I think Oscar Piastri has dropped the ball big time. I do believe that. And that pains me to say, because I generally thought majority of the season Oscar Piastri was going to go on and win this championship. But saying that, Lando Norris, and you look back at Brazil, was phenomenal. Okay? He was phenomenal. And I have no issue in sitting on this podcast and giving credit where it's due, because he has actually turned it around. And last year, he bottled it. This year, he's made big mistakes. He's dropped it as well. But he has turned it around. And that's why he's leading the World Championship. So fair play to him. I'm not going to, you know, everyone thinks this whole Lando agenda. There is no Lando agenda. I gave my opinion that I thought Oscar Piastri was the better driver. I stand by the decision, what I said back then. And I think Oscar Piastri is a fantastic driver. But Lando Norris has turned it around. And fair play to him. He looks like he's on course to go on and win a world championship. So, yeah, credit where credit's due. You know, he's been phenomenal. And in Brazil, in free practice, in the sprint, in sprint qualifying, in the race, in qualifying, he looked fantastic. And that's what we wanted to see. And that is what we've said that has been lacking for the last year. That consistency. And that's what we've said. And that's why I've sat on this podcast and said he hasn't done it enough for me to go on and say he will be a world champion. But credit where credit's due, he's turned that around. And in Brazil, he looked phenomenal.
Yep. So come the end of the season, you will be able to tune in and watch Matt Jackson cry live on camera when Lando Norris inevitably lifts that World Drivers' Championship. And yeah, it's, you know, it's going to be contentious. I've seen a lot of people online saying Lando doesn't deserve it. You actually cannot fucking win. I'm just going to put that out there, right? I do like to think that I feel like, correct me if I'm wrong, you guys listen to me more than I listen to me. I don't feel like I have agendas against any driver. You know, I come out and criticize Lewis when Lewis is poor. Naturally, I have a favoritism towards Lewis because I'm a Lewis fan, but I do think I've spoken very honestly about Lando in the past. And one thing I have noticed with Lando is you genuinely cannot win. You say something bad about him because, I don't know, you've got an opinion he's done something wrong. Oh my god, Lando fans are all over you. You say something good about him, you know, you get cooked for that as well. It only happens with Lando. You actually cannot win. I think I did that post about him, you know, being great all weekend, and I'm pretty sure most of the comments were just like calling me a wanker and stuff. I just think like,
they know you will. They know you will.
Talk about him.
But you know,
yeah, exactly. They hit the nail on the head. But I do want to speak. I'm not going to jeopardize any potential brand deals here. But speaking of unsavory gentlemen, we've got to discuss this John Elkann thing, right? And I know for you guys at home this happened last week, and the same for us. It's Monday. Also, apologies, I know the podcast is a little bit late. It's just because the schedules clashed, and it will be out Monday tonight. It's currently 6:15 Monday evening, and I will get the podcast out tonight for you. But literally an hour after I concluded the recording of last week's podcast, all this stuff about John Elkann came out. Okay, and we haven't had a chance to discuss about it between us, and I haven't had a chance to sit and discuss it with you guys at home. There's something seriously broken at Ferrari. And I've said this for the longest time. Before Lewis Hamilton went to Ferrari, when a lot of people were so gassed about it, I, as a Lewis fan, was like, yeah, I don't know about this one, lads. Ferrari are a team that are systematically broken. I'm an F1 fan, right? Ferrari are iconic. I've never been one of those fans that has hated Ferrari because of the successful years. I was, everyone, even if you weren't a racing fan, was a fan of Michael Schumacher. Everyone knew who Michael Schumacher was. Ferrari are, for me, a team that should always be doing well. They should always be at the top. And for the longest time, that hasn't happened. Now, Ferrari have shown loads of ambition over the years. But how many world champions, how many multiple world champions are you going to go through before you realise, actually, maybe we should start listening to them? You know, Fernando Alonso left the team saying that he sees no ambition there, you know? He doesn't see a team that is ready to win. Sebastian Vettel went there. There was issues there. You know, you've got golden boy Charles Leclerc, who is not fulfilling his potential at this team. They are not enabling that. You then get them splashing out on the creme de la creme of Formula One, Sir Lewis Hamilton, seven-time world champion. And all of a sudden, you get John Elkann, the man at the very top, saying, perhaps our drivers should talk less and drive more.
I think one thing that came from that is he should probably lead by example. Because...
yes.
Already, I have seen, you know, news articles for Ferrari fans saying that the only person who needs to go is John Elkann. You know, he's going after the wrong people. You've got Charles Leclerc fans and Lewis Hamilton fans are hardcore fans of them, okay? And you've got John Elkann coming out and going, they should talk less, they need to be poor. Mate, it's not going to end well for you, because I guarantee you, the fans of these two drivers will all go after you before they go after the drivers. And
do you know what? It's even more than that. It's more than you and me and you guys at home. It's more than the fans. It's actually, look at the opportunity. I'm sorry, right? Don't get me wrong, right? Talented engineers, that super clever people, but the pool of talented engineers is way bigger than the pool of driver capacity that Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc sit in, right? We know a lot of the people in Ferrari are people that have been born and bred Ferrari. They've, you know, their dad's worked there, their granddad's worked there. This is, you know, it stays within the family, and we know that there's a lot of deep-rooted issues there. And I'm sorry, there is an absolute wealth of talent out there that if you need to go in and be brutal and make some, you know, unfavorable decisions that are for the greater good of that team, that starts with where the issue is originating from, because you're not putting Lewis Hamilton and Charles Leclerc in a good car, right? They are not finishing outside of the podium because they're talking too much. This is the team's issue. And don't get me wrong, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, glaze over the truth. Lewis Hamilton has been, you know, not to the standard that we expected of him this season. But ultimately, it doesn't matter, because they weren't winning anything in this car anyway. So no. Rather than telling the drivers to talk less, actually, why don't you listen to them more? Because that's probably a better starting point.
I think what we've said, you know, when Lewis Hamilton came in, yeah, granted, Lewis hasn't been great this year. But this Ferrari team have gone through some fantastic drivers. They've had Fernando Alonso there, a two-time world champion. Sebastian Vettel there, four-time world champion. And then you've got Charles Leclerc, who's golden boy, who's been there for a long time, who is a fantastic driver. And then you've got Lewis Hamilton, seven-time world champion, who comes in, who knows how to win championships. The one thing, you're not just bringing Lewis Hamilton in just to drive, you're bringing him in for his knowledge and his expertise and his experience. If anyone knows how to do that, that's Lewis Hamilton. The issue is, you've got a team who just don't seem to want to listen to their drivers. And you hear that on the radio messages week in, week out. Can we do this? No, we're going to do this. You know, there's no good communication between the drivers and the engineers. And, you know, with John Elkann coming out and saying this, it's a bit laughable, really, because he's saying how great the engineers are doing. Well, I mean, when you look back over last year, 2-3 years, you would probably say that isn't the case.
Yeah, look, Ferrari are seemingly always on the cusp of something good. They're always nearly there, but they're never there. They, you know, they haven't been for absolutely years. And I really think you go through all that effort to get Lewis Hamilton into your team and you decide to come out and attack the drivers, which, look, I say drivers, they're obviously all the rumours coming out are suggesting that this was directed at Lewis Hamilton. But come on, you know, you need to pick your target here. John Elkann should be striving for way more. This is the man at the top. All I'm thinking, if I'm in that team right now, is, okay, so he's happy with mediocrity. Because Ferrari are mediocre right now. That is not where Ferrari should be. Ferrari are not a mediocre team. They're fucking Ferrari. Do you know what I mean? These guys should be always at the top. And I know that's not possible in sport, but we shouldn't be hearing stuff like this. John Elkann, if he really wanted to come out and run his mouth, he should have come out and said, you know, be honest, it was disappointing this weekend. We probably could have got more, but ultimately, this season has not been good enough. And we've not been good enough for a long, long time. And we brought a 7-time world champion in to help turn that around. And it's about time that we start making some serious decisions around here. And that is going to ruffle some feathers. But we're here to win it. Mm. You know, that's what a leader would have done.
Yeah, and I think when you look at Ferrari, their last world title was, what, 2007? Kimi Raikkonen? Mm-hmm. They haven't won the Constructors. They haven't won any title since. And the Tifosi, full of Tifosi, that's embarrassing. For a team like Ferrari, the heritage, the history within that team, they should be winning. They should be winning titles. And you showed ambition by bringing in the likes of Lewis Hamilton. I still think, and like you touched on earlier, they're lacking ambition in other areas. I think they're not being strong enough in making those decisions. If I were Ferrari, I would bring in Christian Horner. I've said this on the podcast before. He's a winner. He knows how to run a team. And when you've got someone like that on the market, why aren't you doing that? Fred Vasseur has come in and he's done a good job. He's done a good job. Nothing more than that. And I think if you are ambitious and you want to win a world title and you want to take that team back to winning championships, you need to go after the best. And you've got people out there who are free at this moment in time who could take you to that level.
Is Fred Vasseur the issue here? That's all I would...
I don't think Fred Vasseur is the issue. But what I think is you're lacking that person or those people to make strong decisions. If Fred Vasseur comes in...
Do you believe that Fred Vasseur is not making strong decisions? I think that the issues are way more deep-rooted to the point where we don't understand, because there's no way Fred Vasseur is sitting there being like, well, you know, I'm happy just sort of in this job. I feel like it's way harder to come in and impact this team than any other team, and it's way harder than people think it is. I don't believe for a second that Fred Vasseur is sat there thinking, perfect, this is exactly how I want it to go. Fred Vasseur, I can imagine, is enduring some severe power struggles. Like I said, a lot of these Ferrari folk, it's in their bloodline.
Okay, so surely, and I agree with you, you know, but wouldn't it be better to get someone in who knows how to deal with big personalities? Christian Horner dealt with Max Verstappen.
What is Christian Horner going to be able to do in a team that Fred Vasseur is not going to be able to do? That's what I'm saying. Look at the man at the very top. John Elkann is coming out and saying, well, look at us, we've got the fastest pit stop, so clearly it's the driver's fault. Not like, look, there's way more wrong with this team. I don't believe you could bring Christian Horner, Toto Wolff, Ron fucking Dennis into it. I don't believe that anyone is going to be able to make a change until you fix the root of the issue. Because I don't believe Fred Vasseur is part of the issue. That's my opinion.
Yeah, no, and look, I get it. For me, I think you need a stronger personality to come in and shake that team up and tell them what it is. That's just how I see it.
You've had Lewis Hamilton come into the team.
Okay, you know, and he's told a team what is wrong. And I agree, it stems from the top with John Elkin, and I get that. But if you start getting more stronger personalities in, highlighting what is wrong, they have no choice but to change.
No, but this is the issue. I don't think it's as simple as that. Wait, you've got people at Ferrari that, like I said, have been at Ferrari since they came out of the womb. It is, you know, it's in their bloodline. They've been there for generations. It's a team that is steeped in all these old relationships, old ways, old beliefs, and I think that it's one of those where, you know, okay, it does need to come from the very, very top, John Elkin, but it also needs to come from the ground up. We need to start seeing actual changes within the team, changes in attitudes. And
okay, so if Ferrari finished fourth in the constructors this year, are we saying that Fred Vasseur has done a good job? Because surely,
I don't think that's the question. I don't think the question is, has Fred Vasseur done a good job? Well, therefore, the answer is bring Christian Horner in. I don't think the solution is as simple as that. I don't think it's a case of, look, although I think it's irrelevant, is Christian Horner a better team principal than Fred Vasseur? Yes, Christian Horner, in my opinion, is the greatest team principal, or, you know, one of, that we've ever seen in F1. But I don't think he's the solution, because I think we'd still see the same issues, because the issue is not stemming from the man in charge at that level.
See, I get what you're saying. I think if Christian Horner went in, I don't think he would tolerate how the day-to-day running is going. I think Fred Vasseur tolerates it, because why would you want to go against? I don't think Christian Horner's got anything to lose. Do you know what I mean? He's had the success. He's already, he's a stronger personality than Fred Vasseur.
But Fred Vasseur is going to know that, you know, if Ferrari finish fourth this year and they don't hit the ground running next year, that his job is going to be in trouble. There's no part of him that is there like, well, you know, we'll just roll with it until I get the sack. He's going to be like, I want this to work. You know, I want Ferrari to be the number one team. And I'm also not saying that I firmly believe that all the mechanics at Ferrari want Ferrari to be the number one team. But they're kind of so stuck in their old ways, you know, a lot of the team, that they're not willing to change those roots in order to become a winning team again. And they're not willing to listen and implement the changes that, you know, drivers over the years will have recommended. Come on, you're telling me you go through Fernando Alonso, Sebastian Vettel and Lewis Hamilton, who between them have 13 world championships, and you don't win a single thing. That the, you know, they've gone through team principles in that time, and it's not making a difference. So I think it's very easy to point the finger at Fred Vasseur, because he's the easy target, and you know he probably will lose his job at some point if Ferrari don't win something. Whether I agree with that or disagree with it, I think is irrelevant. But do I think that bringing anyone else in is going to change it? No, because I think the issues are way deeper.
Yeah. I just think when you look at the team principle, and I agree with you, it's the engineers that need shaking up. There's so much that needs shaking up. But when you look at the recent team principle, you've got Fred Vasseur, okay, fine. Is he better than Christian Horner? I would say no. Benotto, was he better than Christian Horner? No. And then you look down to the last time they had success, and that was Jean Todt. And that was when he left in 2007. So I do think, actually, having a strong leader makes a big difference. I like Fred Vasseur. I love him. I think he's great. Do I think he's strong enough to lead a team like Ferrari? No, personally. But when you have someone like Christian Horner, who is available, who is a winner, he knows how to win championships, he knows how to change a whole team, he knows how to make changes, and he knows how to deal with difficult personalities, I don't know why you wouldn't try and go for someone like that. Because he is not afraid to make those changes.
Look, I just don't think that's the solution. The analogy that I've come up with in my head, right, is you're a doctor, right? And you've got a van, and you've been told, look, you need to take this very important medicine to this address, and you need to get there ASAP. And the doctor says, well, I can't, I haven't got the medicine. You're saying the solution is, well, don't worry, I'll give you a faster car. It's like, yeah, well, that's great, but I haven't got the medicine to give this person. So it doesn't matter how I get there, how quick I get there, what I get there in, I haven't got the solution.
Yeah, and no, I we're going around in circles. I completely get what you're saying. All I'm saying is I don't think Fred Vasseur is strong enough to make those internal changes. If you had someone stronger like Christian Horner, I genuinely believe...
Lazy observation.
Huh? Oh, no. Okay.
You're just attacking a man because he's at the top.
No, I'm not in the slightest. Okay, if you're a team owner, right, you own, I don't know, Volkswagen F1, okay, right? Mm-hmm. Who are you taking? Christian Horner or Fred Vasseur?
Yeah, but it doesn't matter. Who are you sleeping with? Sydney Sweeney or Sabrina Carpenter? It's irrelevant. Like, the issue is that I don't believe anyone at this point in time can change what is going on at that team. I can say it. Yeah, Christian Horner is a better team prince. I would rather Christian Horner leading any team because I think he's an unbelievable team principal, but he has been recently steeped in a little bit of controversy. But, you know, if we're looking purely professional here, I think he is a great team leader and, you know, one of the best team principals that we've ever seen.
I'm talking, just to clarify, I'm talking F1. I'm not talking about what he's done outside. I'm talking actually your F1.
Your solution is the equivalent of being like, well, get Max Verstappen in.
No.
Who would you rather, Max Verstappen or Charles Leclerc?
Max Verstappen.
Do Ferrari win the championship this year if they've got Max Verstappen driving? Give over. They don't fucking... They get nowhere near it. That's what I mean. He's not the solution.
I'm not saying... Look, all I'm saying, and look, we're going around in circles here, is I think if they had a stronger team principal, they would make better internal changes. That's all I'm saying. I agree with you. It's deeper rooted than just the team principal. It's deeper rooted in the sense of looking at the engineers. But you've got to remember, when Fred Vasseur went in, they had a lot of internal changes then. Okay. So whoever Fred Vasseur has brought in as well has a factor on this. Do you know what I mean? There's a lot of people who left Ferrari when Benotto went as well. So it isn't just a simple fact that they've had people there for long term. They've had people there, new people coming in, who don't seem to have that effect. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't know. We won't subject you to this conversation anymore. But I do want to, speaking of going around in circles, I do want to pick up on something that I spoke about last week, which was the Kimi Antonelli theory. You'll be familiar with this, Matt, right?
Will I?
Well, yeah, you tuned into last week's episode, didn't you?
I'll be honest with you. The only parts of the podcast I listened to were when I edited. I didn't listen to the whole podcast.
Which, bear in mind, he didn't edit the podcast. I did.
Hang on. Who edited the clips?
Me, most of them.
Oh, well done. I have one holiday. God forbid I have a holiday, all right?
Anyway, last week we spoke about Kimi Antonelli and his race performance when consuming a substance, a food additive, that is banned in certain countries. Basically, when he's in a country where it's titanium something, it doesn't matter, it's food additive. When he consumes that, his performance is significantly better than when he's in a country where he cannot consume that, okay? And, you know, this became a genuine conspiracy. And now we've had another one come up. Oliver Bearman's race pace seems oddly correlated with countries that allow hormone-treated beef. Hear me up. So,
jeez.
If we look at race pace, Ollie Bearman in Australia, China, and Japan, where hormone-treated beef is allowed, he finished P14, P8, and P10. We're talking race pace, right? Australia qualified P20. China, P17 to P8. And then Japan, yeah, he qualified P10, finished P10. But that's good. That's points, right? You then look at where it's banned, like Saudi, Imola, Monaco, Spain, Canada, Austria, England, right? He's finishing out the points. Out the points. We get to Singapore, USA, Mexico, Brazil, where it's allowed. All of a sudden, Ollie Bearman is on a 4-race point streak. Get this man some hormone-treated beef, and he'll be in that Ferrari in no time. I'm telling you. There's a lot of conspiracies going around
here. Tune in next week for another conspiracy theory.
I did also see one about Nico Hülkenberg, and, you know, it was all to do with how he performs when the sun rises early versus late, and we'll save that one for another time.
Okay, right. Lando Norris broke a 30-year-old F1 record by winning the Brazil Grand Prix last week. But, Luke, can you tell me what the record was?
He was the... Yeah.
Good. So he becomes the first driver to win his first 11 Grand Prix at 11 different circuits. This surpassed Michael Schumacher, who won his first 10 races at 10 different tracks between 1992 and 1994. So as we know, Luke, quiz for you, where was Lando Norris's first F1 victory?
Miami.
Well done. And obviously he followed up with wins in the Netherlands, Singapore, Abu Dhabi later last year. But obviously he's won a further 7 races at different circuits this year. So well done to Lando Norris, breaking a record, taking it off Michael Schumacher. It's impressive.
He says with gritted teeth.
Oh, come on. Let's give this a break now, okay? I can praise Lando Norris without there being an agenda, all right? Let's move on from that.
What have you got for us next?
Well, the FIA and F1 have agreed to take emergency measures for next weekend's Qatar Grand Prix.
Huh? You're coming out of the speaker here. I don't know. My AirPod's not kicked in. Give me just a second.
All good now?
No. You're
coming out. Luke has this issue, right, with his AirPods. I don't know why. Can you hear me now?
Well, I mean, I can hear you. Yeah, but it's coming out of my. Basically, these AirPods are so old, right? And I don't actually like AirPods. They just disconnect. They've disconnected. So they last about like 30 minutes. So I have to switch them over halfway through. And they're just not working. Do you know what, Matt? You take the lead here. I'm gonna find my other headphones. And you tell everyone what's
all
going
right
on.
So, the FIA and F1 have agreed to take emergency measures for next weekend's Qatar Grand Prix in the interest of driver safety. So, a special rule, I love a special rule, which has also been approved by Pirelli, will be implemented to mitigate the risk of dangerous tyre blowouts. It has been deemed necessary due to the abrasive surface at the Qatar circuit. So, the special rule, what is it? So it is in place for next weekend's Grand Prix, and that will mandate that no tyre across all sessions over the 3 days completes more than 25 laps. So it means every driver will be forced to make at least 2 pit stops over the 57-lap race. So if they use, for example, in practice, they use a set of mediums for 10 laps. They can only use that for 15 laps. So it means that actually there will be a mandatory two pit stop at the Qatar Grand Prix. And look, we've given Pirelli quite a lot of stick over this year, but what's your thought on it?
Well, I'm going to give them more stick. Let them have a blowout. Christ, let's get some excitement. A mandatory two-stop race. Oh, that's going to change everything. I know they're not doing it for entertainment purposes, but yeah, look, safety does come first. I know a lot of you get annoyed when we say we just want entertainment, but it's an entertainment business, everyone. I don't really know. I don't have too many thoughts on it. Are they doing it for safety, or are they trying to make it more entertaining? Even though we know that a mandatory two-stop race is not more entertaining, I would rather them be like, oh shit, these tires are going to be a bit touch and go around this track. Yeah, keep that fucking information to yourself. Let them find out the hard way.
Because in 2021, we had blowouts, didn't we? Bottas, and there's a couple of others who had, you know, really quite nasty blowouts there. So, look, it's a measure they've put in.
That's what I'm asking for. Give us the blowouts. That's what we need. You know, I admire Pirelli and their ability to develop something so incredible. You know, the idea that you could engineer a tire on an F1 car that is able to last a whole race, which we know they could, is, you know, a marvel in itself. But come on. Give us something to look forward to. That unpredictability, it's what we all want.
But we got some good news for the F1 Academy. So McLaren Racing has announced an expansion in its driver development program with two new recruits and a second car in the F1 Academy for 2026. So the Woken outfit currently fields one car in the all-female racing series, driven by Ella Lloyd. The 20-year-old will be joined by Ella Stevens in 2026 in the second McLaren-backed car, which is operated by Rodine Motorsport. So obviously the F1 Academy is getting bigger and bigger, which is great to see. But McLaren have also signed Ella Häkkinen to the driver development program. So she'll be testing single-seaters in preparation for 2027. But the mad thing is, Ella Häkkinen is only 14 years old, and she has become the youngest signing to McLaren's driver development program. And as we know, she is a daughter of two-time world champion Mika Häkkinen. But I mean, McLaren are doing the right things with the development, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, look, McLaren have been a very progressive team for a while now, I'd say. And I don't think anyone's ever criticised, you know, what Zak Brown and wider team have done for McLaren and where they have taken them. You know, McLaren are really a team that are at the top of the game, and I love the fact that they are expanding that beyond just, you know, the narrow lens of F1 that we kind of all look through, because F1 is way, way bigger than just what we see on a Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You know, so much more goes into it. The years and years of hard work that everyone has to put in to get to that level, it requires the teams to nurture all of that. So I think the fact that we are opening up new avenues for people that you wouldn't ordinarily see in the sport, be it people of colour, be it women, you know, I think it's great. And it's no surprise that you see McLaren at the forefront of that.
McLaren are brilliant at it. They really are. It's impressive. So I know the biggest question you want to know, Luke. Can Lando win the title in Vegas? You've been asking it all week, haven't you? Can he do it? Well, I can tell you, he can't. So Lando Norris cannot win the 2001 World Championship in Vegas. There is still a total of 83 points left on the table from three Grand Prix, plus eight for the Qatar sprint race. So if Norris were to win in Vegas, a maximum 25 points, and Piastri were to finish outside of the points or not at all, Norris would move to 415 points to Piastri 366, a gap of 49 points. So after Vegas, there will be a 58 points remaining, meaning Norris would still require 10 points to be mathematically certain of the world championship. So still a long way to go, but no, Lando Norris cannot win the title in Vegas.
Well, thank God you shared that with everyone.
You're welcome.
You're welcome. But he can win it in, obviously, Qatar. I know this because my brother's going. And I think he's torn in two, right? Because he wants Lando to win the championship. He has done all season. Yeah, but wouldn't you love to have it, you know, go right down to the wire, the championship? You know, I get it, you want Lando to win, but wouldn't you rather see him win in a super exciting Abu Dhabi showdown of, like, it all boils down to this? Because I think that is so special when it comes down to Abu Dhabi, and, you know, it all rests on that. I just think it kind of makes you forget that you've had perhaps not the greatest season.
Yeah.
Because you kind of ride off the high of that final race. And yeah, he was kind of caught in two minds because he's like, oh, you know, it'd be great to see Lando win it there in the flesh. But at the same time, how nice would it be to have that Abu Dhabi tension build amongst all of us? You know, that whole weekend, if we know it's going down to the wire, we're all going to be watching so intently.
Mm. No, I agree. So, do you want to know timings?
I think it's going to be an extremely long weekend for a lot of us. But
it's going to be an early
just,
one.
Just quickly, so we should say this. If you do want access to timings, right, on your home screen, download BoxBox. Like BoxBox Club, the widget, you can get it there on your home screen and you can see them in your local time. At literally, you don't even have to click a button anymore. You can lift your phone up and it will illuminate and you can have them there.
Yeah.
I just wanted to drop that in because that's how I always look at F1 times.
No, I'm using the app right now. Friday morning, FP1, 12:30 until 1:30 in the morning, right, midnight.
Okay, so that is, just for reference, that is Thursday night. You know what I mean? Yeah.
FP2. 4 a.m. till 6 to 4 a.m. till 5 p.m. 5 a.m. 5 p.m. It's gonna be a long day for them. Practice on Saturday morning, so Friday night basically, 12:30 till 1:30. FP qualifying will be 4 o'clock in the morning until 6 o'clock. Till
are
5
you,
o'clock.
Are you waking up for that?
I'm
not gonna watch FP2. And I'm not going to watch FP1. No, I am going to watch FP1. I'm not going to watch FP2 or FP3. But I am going to watch FP1 and quali. Obviously, yeah. I'll watch all of, like, the
I will get up for quali. And obviously, the race. Race on what Sunday morning is 4 a.m. till 6 a.m.
This, yeah, fine, whatever. Like, obviously, I'll get up and watch it. So that's Sunday morning.
Yep, the 23rd.
So they are racing on Saturday.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, lads, it's going to be a tough one, but we're gonna do it. We are gonna do it.
Right, Luke, the main question.
There's something quite nice about these races when everyone wakes up and you're all texting at like 4 o'clock and you're like, what the fuck are we doing?
Which one was it where you and I watched it together? Was it Japan? When did we get up and we watched it ridiculously Japan, in the morning?
Yeah, I think it was a Japan race.
Hmm. Yeah, it is something nice about it, but actually getting up early is just, yeah, is a tough one. But Luke, the all important question, who is your top three for this weekend's Las Vegas Grand Prix?
It's a very interesting one because, you know, George Russell looked very quick there last year, but the car hasn't, I wouldn't say the car has looked quick this year at any Vegas-like tracks. It is getting tricky to predict because, you know, Max Verstappen off the back of last week, anything is possible. Max could win. The McLarens are still, you know, likely the standout car for me. Will the Ferraris be quick? I don't know, but the dreamer inside of me is going to say Oscar Piastri. And the only reason I say this is because I'm manifesting a title fight all the way to Abu Dhabi. So I'm going to say Oscar Piastri, Max Verstappen, Lewis Hamilton.
Wow. Okay, there you go. I'm going to go Max Verstappen, Lando Norris, Oscar Piastri.
Yeah, again, incredibly. Do you know what? That is one thing that I think I remember when we did that 2023 season and we did these predictions. And it's like P1, Max, every single time, like without hesitation. But it is genuinely trickier, I find, at this point to, I can't say with absolute certainty that I think Lando Norris is going to win or Oscar Piastri. If I had to say, if you were like, here's £20, mate, go and place a bet on this, who's going to win? I would probably put my money on Lando, but I'm going to keep my prediction on the basis that I'm a dreamer.
No, do let us know. Do drop a comment. Who is your top three for the Las Vegas Grand Prix? I believe that is everything.
I'd say that was, that, you know, it's not been the most exciting news week in F1. I wish I'd recorded the podcast last week, like an hour later, and we could have really gone in. I mean, we did go pretty in depth on the John Elkann thing, but yeah, it's race week and we're in Vegas. So get hyped up because it is going to be a party. It's looking cold there. It's looking very cold last I saw. So look, Vegas got a bad rep when it came about. It's yet to give us a bad race. So let's enjoy it.
Yeah. We'll be back next week reviewing the Las Vegas Grand Prix. So it's nice to be back. And Nathan, if you're listening, I hope it wasn't, you know, too bad for you. There was no Lando agenda. So hopefully you enjoyed this podcast. But yeah, we'll be back next week reviewing the Las Vegas Grand Prix. It's nice to be back. Luke, have a great week and we shall see you soon. Bye-bye.